Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 264 featuring EJ Hotzenfratz, who comes to us from the School of Motion. He is, I believe, the 3D creative director over there. And basically, his big thing is teaching the motion graphics industry 3D, mainly through Cinemas 4D. He was a really cool guy to have on, right, Kristen?
Yes, I really enjoyed it.
I liked him. Mm-hmm. I liked him a lot. It was really cool. I mean, the guys from School of Motion reached out to us and they said, hey, we'd really like to have EJ on the podcast. And I said, sure, why not? If he's in LA, let us know. And he came by and I had a really good time with him. I actually learned a lot. What did you learn from him?
Well, first thing is, if you don't know how to do it, just say yes and then learn.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because there's a lot of times like, yeah, I don't know, but I'll figure it out, right?
Oh, yeah. That's all I do. I always say yes.
Right. And that's a good thing to do. Just, you know, just because you don't know how to do something doesn't mean you can't learn it quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and he did that in about a week. He learned how to do 3D.
Yeah. He basically learned how to do 3D in about a week because he had no idea. And so it's like, and he made something and they all thought it was great.
And it was for like a big, it was like ABC
an,
or something?
It's like an ABC logo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, dang, okay. Yeah. And now he does his own tutorials kind of after all his learning and everything. And you guys kind of like touch back, like it was harder to learn kind of way back when you guys, like how iPhones are now and like, I don't know, you went back all the old stuff and you do the Gnomon DVDs or like dinosaurs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, back then the way you would learn stuff is to listen to, you know, watch DVDs or whatever. I mean, nowadays, I mean, you could go to college on YouTube practically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's pretty amazing how much the world has changed in that time. But it was really good insight to sort of think about how education has changed and how to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And what he is talking about at School of Motion was very interesting because they're going beyond just watching a bunch of YouTube videos, right? Because that's easily accessible. They sort of really try to give you much more hands-on training. And he talks about the difference between that and how it is to go to get a degree in whatever you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So a degree is not necessarily what you need.
No. Right. And then, yeah, he was talking about like, yeah, saving all the money and all that, which is,
Yeah, because college could cost a lot of money and then you don't really know if you really want to do that. So it's not always the right way to spend your money.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's, it was a really great conversation and EJ was really great. And I really want to thank School of Motion for helping us have him on. Let's talk a little bit about events. What's going on in events?
All right. You can find our events at chaosgroup.com/events.
Yep.
And our big one is Total Chaos. We'll keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And that is May 29th to 31st in our home of Sofia, Bulgaria. So
very, very exciting.
Yeah. And you can, you can go to chaosgroup.com/totalchaos to get tickets and find out all the fun speakers we have.
And I mentioned this before, but in case you guys are listening now, you should buy your tickets soon because they are starting to sell out. And if you're trying to buy one at the last minute, you may not be able to get one. So please make sure and check it out. We're outselling faster than we have in the past by a long shot. So go check it out. I'd love to if you want to go, it would be good to buy it now. Additionally, another announcement we have is Lavina is finally out in public beta, which is very exciting. So Lavina is our first real-time ray tracer, and I mean 100% ray traced and 100% real-time that we've put out there, and there's a lot of information about it. If you guys want to go check it out, chaosgroup.com/Lavina. If you own a license of V-Ray, you can use that same license to run Lavina. So it actually should work just fine. You guys should really just go to chaosgroup.com/Lavina, download it, try it out, let us know what you think about it. That's the whole point of betas, is that we get your feedback. So it'd be great to have that feedback on Lavina for sure. Also, if you want to find more about Chaos Group, CG Garage, Kristen, where should I go?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Perfect. Or
chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
And of course, if you want to contact us and know and let us know about extra guests like EJ, which was great, or you want to know more about questions about certain guests we have or suggestions of any kind, we'd love to hear from you. Just labs@chaosgroup.com. All right, that being said, please enjoy this great podcast with EJ Hassenfratz.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
These are the Heil PR40s.
Oh, man. Yeah, they sound nice.
They sound good?
Yeah. I just got a new microphone. What the hell were they? I forget what the hell ones. They're like $100. I used to have Yetis.
Oh, yeah.
And like they were nice. But then I got this one. It was like $125, and it sounds like really nice and crisp.
Yeah, these are not cheap.
Yeah.
These are like $400, I think.
Yeah.
But then they're like, if this is the thing you want to get for a podcast.
Right.
This is what I first invested in, and I said, okay, here's my deal, right? And you and I are graphic people, so
yeah.
You've already started recording, by the way.
Okay.
So you and I are graphic people. You can fix bad picture. It's hard to fix bad sound.
Oh, sure.
Right. So if you get a good microphone, then you don't have to worry about it too much. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was my deal when we got these. Like, okay, we get good microphones, good audio. If we don't talk about anything, at least we'll sound good. Right.
Yeah. Garbage in, garbage out.
Right. Yeah. So if you have really good content, but it doesn't sound good, it's not going to work. So
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but we will have both today, I'm sure.
Yeah, let's hope on that.
I know we will. All right, so I think what would be cool for our audience is to get a little backstory. Everyone loves an origin story, especially when you get into the superhero films.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your origin story. You've been teaching at School of Motion, which we'll get to in a second. What was that journey that got you to do that kind of stuff?
Well, I got bit by a radioactive spider.
Mm.
So that old chestnut.
Yeah.
Now, I think I had a very similar story to maybe a lot of artists that are, how old am I now? 37.
Okay.
Like, so I've been in the industry for, 12, 13, 14 years, man. It's getting up there though.
Yeah.
But I mean, motion graphics really wasn't a thing when I was in college. So my dad and my uncle, they worked at ABC, NBC, and they were art directors there. So they went to graphic design school. Like, they drew a lot. They cut things out and pasted it together and took photos of them and then digitized it. And, we're talking, I learned on Quantel paint boxes and stuff. Wow.
Okay.
So that dates me a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, my dad always did art. He drew. And, as a child, I always liked to draw as well. And, I would be tracing, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at the time. Uh-huh. And like my dad would just draw them. And I was so amazed. Like, you can just draw that really well and you're not tracing it,
Uh-huh.
So I always knew I loved art. But
and where was this?
So that I grew up in Pittsburgh,
Pennsylvania. Oh, okay.
And, I knew I liked art. And, my dad worked in Pittsburgh at NBC, one of the local news stations down there. And I would, even before that, when I was growing up and I was like 2 and 3, we lived in Manhattan or in Jersey, at least. And my dad worked in Manhattan at the ABC affiliate there.
Yeah.
And like he'd bring me into work. And that was like, I was doing Quantel paint boxes when I was 2 and 3 years old. Like that was fun to draw on. That's like the coolest way to draw when you're 3 years
Hell
old.
Yeah.
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 So like I was always surrounded by that. And I just think that always stuck with me. I really loved what, drawing and all that stuff. And that's really all I knew is that I knew I liked to draw.
Right.
So how do I make money off that? Like I'm not good enough to be a cartoonist or comic book artist or anything like that. And again, motion graphics really wasn't a thing. Like no one I knew did it. Like even when I went to school, like I went to just my dad actually gave me some really good advice. He's like, you know what? We're going to take you to this state university. You're not going to the art institute. because it's a lot of money. It's only 2 years. Get a well-rounded education and figure out what the heck you want to do. Because at the time, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I liked art. So went and got a fine art degree. And I think all in all, I spent, you know, or my parents spent like maybe $40,000 on my 4 years of school back then.
Okay.
Which is really good.
It's a pretty good deal.
So no
in
debt.
In the U.S., that's a huge
deal. Yeah. So no debt. I might be wrong on how much my parents spent, but it wasn't like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Which is what a lot of
which
people
is a spend. Lot. Of, yeah, exactly. So I got out and, you know, I learned a little bit of Photoshop. I did sculpting. I did photography, and like, we weren't even talking digital cameras. Mm-hmm. Like, we were actually in the chemical room,
yep,
snorting all kinds of, you know, bad chemicals, yep, I think. But, you know, that was a fun tactile experience. And I think that's a good experience to have. And maybe, I think what a lot of people that have been so far in the digital world kind of crave that now is they need that tactile outlet. Yeah. So I feel like we're kind of getting back to that a little bit.
Yeah.
Like Procreate's a big thing now. Mm-hmm. But then I got out and I was like, okay, what do I do now?
Right.
You know, I had some stuff in Photoshop. I was building, you know, flyers and stuff like designing flyers. And, you know, I just didn't know what the heck to do. I worked at Fossil Watches for a while.
Okay.
And you're just trying to figure out what I wanted. And luckily, like I said, my dad was, the art director at ABC or ABC? NBC.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, do you want an internship and, you know, put in your work and, you know, you're doing a good job and a little bit of nepotism thrown in there too.
Sure.
But that doesn't hurt anyone.
No.
I got an internship there and man, like that really accelerated my growth because now I was seeing like, okay, outside of Photoshop and like going on the, you know, Quantel paint boxes and building like, you know, we're building, over the shoulders and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, that was like my direct translation from like, okay, I know how to use Photoshop from school and know how to design stuff. And
now you're using it for something practical, right?
Yeah. Now I'm like getting paid an internship, you know, rate, which, yep, you know, is fine.
Yeah. But it's
better
good
than nothing.
And it's NBC.
Exactly.
Know, so that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was really my first foray. I started learning After Effects and man, that jump from designing a still frame to how do I make something look
move
and look interesting over 10 seconds or something like that.
Right.
So that was a huge learning curve. And luckily we had an amazing artist, Steve Benton, who he was the After Effects artist there and the senior designer animator. And man, I just sat right next to him every day and just watched him and slowly started, you know, fumbling my way through After Effects. And I was like, you know what, this is fun. And, you know, Steve would show me.
So what year is this approximately? So people can get an approximate idea.
Yeah, so let's see. This is probably like 2004.
Okay. So After Effects was not, that was a little new.
Yeah, it was like After Effects 5 or 5.5 something.
Yeah, I know
the little
that.
Radio antenna.
Yes, the radio antenna. Okay.
Yes. Yep. It was radio antenna days.
But it didn't have any 3D yet, right?
It might have. It had 2D, like 2.5D.
2.5D. So you could. It was like putting planes behind planes.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And man, that like blew my mind. Like,
yes.
You know, I can't even make something look good in 2D. Now you threw 3D in there. I'm like, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
But he would introduce me to all these like motion design studios in New York City and LA, and you know that was you know some of my first like MK12.
Uh-huh.
They were like, oh man, like cutting edge stuff.
God. Beautiful
and like,
work.
Especially 3D in After Effects, just seeing how, like what was possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really spurred my passion to like, okay, this is what I want to do now. This is art. Like, this is my creative outlet. This is what I want to make money doing.
Right.
And, you know, my internship was up and had to search for another job. Got a job at PBS in DC.
Oh, wow.
And started working there and, you know, same kind of thing where was learning After Effects on the fly and, you know, I was actually,
that's hard, right? Because if you're working for local stations, you got to come up with stuff in like a half an hour, right?
Yeah. We call it the fast food of graphics.
And that's right.
And I think, you know, it's funny. It's something I think I struggled to this day because I worked in, you know, that fast food of graphics mentality.
Right.
Where you have a day max, maybe two. Like if you had 3 days on a project, you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with myself. Like that's so much time.
Yeah.
Where now you're working, you know, when I went freelance and it's like, hey, we got a 3-month gig. I'm like, what? Like that, that just is that amount of time to work on something is just foreign.
I think my wife, when she was doing motion graphics and stuff, she's like, my, honestly speaking, I joke, but my dream job would be to do graphics for like the Daily Show, you know, like, because
actually, yeah, my one of my dad's friends, Joe Detmore, actually worked at the Daily Show.
Really? And did some because of that, so, the graphics that are on there are so funny. It's you just get to do really stupid but hilarious graphics all day long.
Oh yeah,
but I'm sure their deadlines are crazy.
Yeah, I mean Stephen Colbert, I think you're seeing a lot of really cool stuff. I think they do After Effects, their character animator tool for their cartoon trump and all that stuff. like really great and I mean that's really cool to see. Like how graphics is kind of transcended to this whole other medium. Like, you know, like you have a cartoon sitting down in the chair opposite of Stephen Colbert.
Right.
And he's doing this interview and it's all live in real time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yes.
Crazy, crazy. All right. So didn't mean to distract you. Go back to your PBS, your PBS in DC.
And PBS, And I worked there for about, you know, 6-8 months and ended up getting a job at ABC in DC.
Okay.
And started working there. And one of the guys there was using Cinema 4D. And I would always now I went from like, okay, I feel comfortable in After Effects, but now I'm seeing this 3D stuff. And then he's introducing
me. And this is like real 3D.
Yeah, this is real 3D. And this was, you know, we're talking 2006, 2007-ish. Yep. So that's when...
You were on a Mac, I'm assuming?
Yeah, everything was Mac. Yeah. We were on those teal plastic shell kind of deals, the teal towers. And then, you know, we had the cheese grater, the old school cheese graters, which, you know...
Those are pretty good.
Yeah, I have one of these those to this day.
Yeah.
So yeah, all Macs and... I would just sit there just like I sat next to Steve and watched him do his wizardry in After Effects. I would sit there and would watch some of the artists there use Cinema 4D. And I was just like, wow, that's really crazy stuff. And at the time, the only 3D I did was like using Zach's Works Invigorator, which was a plugin for After Effects at the time. And
okay.
So you could kind of inject that. I know Element 3D is kind of like a supercharged version, like modern version of that today.
Yeah.
So you're learning 3D, but you're still in that ecosystem of After Effects and Adobe. And then my buddy that was the senior artist there left, and my art director came up to me and was like, hey, you want to be the senior artist there?
And you hadn't been there that long, I'm assuming, right?
I was there... Probably a couple years.
A couple years, okay.
But like the senior designer was like the 2D and 3D person. Like if you knew 3D, you're like a magician.
Right.
Because people that knew 3D in like the mid 2000s, like that was pretty cutting edge. Like that's Houdini now. To back then,
got it.
Like if you know he,
we'll get to that part of the conversation. Yes, but I get what you're saying now. All right, knowing 3D was a big step. Like that, those were the wizards. Those were the flame artists of compositors, right?
Exactly. Because I mean, you're talking about how much After Effects was, and that was before Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
You know, After Effects was like what, $600 a year? Like $600 for like a
License.
For perpetual. A license, perpetual.
Yeah.
And Cinema 4D, like 3D software, you know, Maya, 3D Studio Max, talking like almost $4,000.
Yeah.
So that's a jump.
Yeah. Not anymore, but yes.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
But I mean, especially for like a you know, local TV news station where their budget's razor thin anyways. It's hard to, you know, get anything updated.
Yep.
So my buddy, my senior designer guy left and I took the position and immediately, like I knew nothing about 3D at all other than just like looking over my buddy's shoulder. And we had some guys from an affiliate station say like, hey, we need a 3D logo animated and all this stuff. And my art director's like, can you do that? I'm like, yeah, sure. No idea how to do
it. How many times have I heard on this podcast, I said yes, but I had no idea how to do it.
Yes.
Just advice to anyone, like, just do it.
Say
yes to anything.
Figure it out. Yeah. I mean, when you challenge yourself like that and you don't know something, you got a deadline. That's the best way to learn.
You're going
to
figure it out.
Those are when the gains really come. And man, like I went from like Monday knowing nothing about 3D to Friday delivering like a final 3D logo animation of like an ABC logo, and they loved it. And it's like, I'm sure if I saw that now, I'd be like, what a piece of crap. But mm-hmm. I mean, they loved it. I mean, you didn't have to do much in 3D back then to impress some people.
Right.
They were just like, okay, that's a shiny thing flying on the screen and rotating. That's cool.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my first foray. And
that was the first 3D thing you did.
Yeah, it was a 3D ABC logo.
That's like pretty good.
Channel 7, whatever.
And you had 7 days to do it, or 5 days.
A week. Yeah, from Monday to Friday, I had to figure out. One of the difficult things was back then is you had no YouTube. Like, I don't, was YouTube even around in 2000? I don't even know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It certainly was not the resource you have now.
Exactly.
Right.
It's crazy how you go back just like 10, 15 years and you're like, yeah, Amazon didn't exist. Like iPhones weren't a
thing.
There
were no iPhones until 2007.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just crazy how you go back and you're like, oh yeah, that didn't even, like Google Maps, that was not a thing. How did we drive?
GPS on your phone did not exist until 2008.
Yeah. Yeah. To get here, I would have had to print out MapQuest directions from my hotel.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you just plug it in your phone. You just don't think. So it's just crazy the amount of technology.
Funny you say that. Yeah. That wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't. I mean, we're talking 12 years.
Right.
And everything was completely different.
Yeah.
But I mean, back then when I was learning stuff, there was absolutely no tutorials on it. Yep. Now, like, everyone's doing a tutorial.
Yeah.
About any given subject. You can learn anything. How to throw an axe. There's a YouTube video, how to throw an axe the correct way.
I'm looking at a lot of fly fishing videos recently.
Yeah. I mean, there's just like, where do I begin?
Yeah.
And back then there was really nothing. So you had like the thick Maxon Bible, and you're just thumbing through it. And some of it was outdated, you know, it's translated from German because Maxon's a German company. And, you know, that's how I learned. And then, you know, they had like 3D Fluff, I think was like we had DVDs.
Yes.
That you'd pop into the DVD drive.
Guilty as charged. Those? I used to make DVD those drives? For Noman.
Yeah.
I made V-Ray training DVDs for Noman like way 2005, 2006 I made Noman training DVDs.
Yep.
And they're very popular.
Yeah.
And I don't know, they're probably on the internet somewhere now.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you see those are like collector's items now.
Yeah,
it's like,
hey,
remember this?
Funny you said that. I actually went to Blizzard. And they have a library at Blizzard where it's all kinds of reference stuff. So you can walk around the library. It's pretty cool. They decorated it so it totally looks like, you know, something that Blizzard would do. Mm-hmm. But they had a huge like training library of DVDs there. And I'm like, whoa, huge. And I was like, who really looks at these anymore? So I was like, they got it. And so I found my two DVDs into the Blizzard library. I was like, oh my God. And they were like collector's items, like you said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just went to Maxon's offices yesterday. I always like to say hi when I'm in town. And they have like a whole wall of like the old boxes.
Oh, nice.
The old DVDs and even like the, you know, the floppy disks and stuff.
Nice.
And yeah.
Yeah. I remember when Maya came out, I felt like I could justify, because I was teaching at my university at the time and Maya costs a fortune. I think it was 50 grand literally for a copy of
Maya.
Take
out a mortgage for Maya.
But I felt like I could justify the cost of Maya because it had all the manuals, which was like a box, like boxes about like 4 feet long of manuals to do it. Because that was the only way to learn it was literally paper, right?
Right. Yeah. So like fast forward ahead now,
Sorry.
I love the reminiscing. It's just like, things were so drastically different in a very short amount of time.
That's the way you learned back then.
That bell curve is.
Yep.
But I mean, now, you know, there's just so much information out there. So, so I started learning 3D and there was a guy, Nick Campbell. I'm sure if anyone's listening to this, they know Grayscale Gorilla. Anyone who uses Cinema 4D knows Grayscale Gorilla. Like just like anyone who knows After Effects, they know Andrew Kramer.
Yeah.
And like Andrew Kramer was, you know, he was the only guy doing really cool VFX tutorials back in the day.
Yeah.
There was another guy, a Japanese guy, Ayato, I believe it is. And he did some really cool 3D like particle stuff.
Okay.
So there's like, you know, three websites, Grayscale Gorilla, like he was doing really, like, he was the only guy doing Cinema 4D tutorials. And I think he single-handedly, like, helped put stuff on the map along with some of the MoGraph tools that came out with Cinema 4D that just really made 3D accessible. And I think that was a key for me getting into 3D in general, is just because, you know, you'd open up Cinema 4D and it had that integration with After Effects. And I was used to that Adobe ecosystem. It was just such an easy translation over to 3D where, you know, everything just kind of made sense and I didn't need to know any program. I didn't need to write any code.
Okay.
Where, you know, I remember I got a version of Maya, not an official version. I'll just say that.
Sure.
And you just open it up. And I'm just like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I think you see that with like Houdini now.
Yeah.
Where you open it up, it's like, I don't even know how to begin to make a thing. Like, how do I even make a cube here? Like, I remember
I was at DD. This is a long, long time ago. And I was, you know, I was doing Maya. I was pretty good in Maya. I could do all this stuff. I was building all this stuff. And it's like, I said, you know what? I'm going to start doing Houdini. I want to learn Houdini. And my supervisor was like, you know, before you do that, you may want to take up smoking again.
There's a reason why we have a stock bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, the stress was high. It was like, it was really funny. But anyway, Houdini is still a great program. I'm not going to knock it. It's an amazing program. It's just very powerful and it's just a little overwhelming when you see it, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing where Cinema 4D, it's super easy to get in there, start making stuff. But then I think you easily hit a wall.
Right.
When like you could really push, like, the one thing I'm seeing a lot with Houdini is like dynamics and cloth sims and particle sims and fluid sims. And like you hit a wall pretty quickly. And I mean, it's just because, man, those systems haven't been updated in Cinema 4D for a while now. Like we're talking maybe six, 7 years.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
that's got, not their market.
Yeah. They got a lot of stuff going on, but I mean, it's fun for me as an educator to like, yeah, I see that stuff in Houdini. Let's see if we can use the really easy to use tools in Cinema and figure that out. And it's amazing how you can do that.
Houdini, I mean, sorry, Cinema has been a staple for the motion graphics 3D world for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's because you have to be able to do that in the situation where you are, like you said, the fast food of graphics, right?
Right, yeah.
You got to be able to I got to bang something out of nothing in like a couple of hours, right? Yeah. And that's a great tool to do that with, you know? You may not necessarily be able to do some of the, you know, very hardcore rigging or whatever it is, but you can bang out some graphics really fast and you can do it on multiple platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really cool, yeah.
If I need to make 500, we got 500 hamburgers to make. I'm using Cinema 4D.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally.
So all that to say,
yeah.
You know, I'm completely self-taught at everything that I've learned.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know, Nick really, I think, was someone out there that, in Andrew Kramer, that really inspired me to get out and get active in the community.
So did you get in touch with them on the internet or did you just like, just were inspired by them and it's like, you know what, I'm going to just try to do this.
Yeah. I mean, cause even back then we talk about how different things are. Like we spoke off mic about going to conferences and stuff.
Right.
And I feel like motion graphics artists didn't really do NAB or C-Graph at all. And it really wasn't this big community event where now it's like this week, you know, it's a nerd fest and it's an amazing week that you get to spend just nerding out whatever you want. And just the community aspect is just so much different now because, I mean, again, when was Facebook around? Like when did Facebook first come out on the scene? 2003, 2004. Like I remember at the very end of college, which I graduated in 2004.
Right.
Facebook was just beginning to be a thing.
Right.
So social media, like how you can connect with people on MySpace all over the world.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think about like when, and it's such an interesting time as like a motion graphics artist where I went to school when motion graphics was just beginning to be a term.
Right.
Or even an avenue of a career. To where it is now, and you have students that know exactly what they want to do because motion graphics has been around for 15 years, 20 years.
Because it used to be you're a graphic designer that happens to know how to animate.
Exactly.
Right? And now it's like its own thing.
Now you have to, like the bare minimum, you know how to animate.
Right.
And like, I think we're moving to an area now where it's like, if you don't know 3D now too, Like you're kind of, you're not very marketable.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cause I think you're, I mean, I think you're seeing that if you have a client and it's like, you have to be really good, be a really good animator, or like, I think something that is kind of maybe a pushback to, like infographic videos and stuff where everything's like, looks like clip art and like just very soulless kind of looking stuff. And you're seeing this resurgence of cell animation, which is incredible. You have studios like Golden Wolf that's their bread and butter, is like these really cool cell animated. So I think you're getting this resurgence or renaissance of really good 2D animated, like with a lot of style and like breaking away from the clip arty look that you might have seen in like the early 2010s or something like that.
Right.
But going back to, training and just learning stuff, there was really nothing. So, you get active in the community and there in DC, there wasn't a really huge, community for motion designers. And I think even now, I think it's starting to get bigger now just because I think the community is really exploding and there's a lot of outlets for that to connect with other people. And there was an animators group in DC and I went to a couple of them cause I was like, I work in this little edit booth by myself. No one else in the entire company knows 3D at all.
Sure.
Like the only outlet for me to connect with other people was going on to Grayscale Gorilla and, in the comments section and stuff and like going on Twitter. And just chatting with like-minded people, seeing what other people are doing. Cause I was so insulated, back then. So it was really hard for a self-taught artists to really get ahead because, I wasn't working at a studio where there was like three other animators or three other 3D artists there that I could see how they were working.
Right.
And all that stuff. But now it's like, you can see how everyone works.
Yeah.
Like the curtain is pulled and you can see all the tricks and all that stuff. And that's one of the really great things about the industry today is that everyone's so giving and willing to share their knowledge, which is really awesome.
Right.
But I went to this meetup, and one of the meetups they had in the next month was Cinema 4D artists and, what Cinema 4D can do. And I guess it was sponsored by Maxon. And, me and another buddy of mine that I met through social media, he was like the only other guy in DC that I knew. One of the hard things about DC is like everyone's working for government contractors. So like no one can really show their work.
Right.
Because it's all top secret or, all the red tape and stuff you have to get through.
Of course.
So like Discovery Channel was like a big industry in DC. Like there was very little, like all the shops that existed, they did Discovery. So
interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's changed now. Like a lot of the Discovery work went to New York, but that's a whole nother story.
Okay.
So I rang up my friend. I was like, David, his name, Dave Glanz. I was like, you use Cinema 4D? I use Cinema 4D. Like, do you want to present at this thing? Cause the guy was, looking for Cinema 4D artists. And I asked him, I was like, did you find anyone yet? He's like, no. I was like, do you know? I was like, well, I could do it if you want. He's like, yes, please. Like we need people. So okay, I was like, okay, my buddy Dave, we'll go do it.
Perfect.
And I've never done public speaking before.
Okay.
Aside from my public speaking class in college, which I got a C minus in.
Okay.
So that's setting the stage.
doing pretty good.
I might get a B now, maybe B minus, but I've gotten a little better.
You don't actually have an audience visible, but you do have an audience.
Sure. But I mean, oh man, it was tough. I went, did like a 20 minute presentation and clammy hands and, but I got through it and David did, as well. And he did really well. And, that was cool. I was like, that was fun. I met a lot of 3D artists there and a lot of people were really interested in learning more. And, and I think one of the cool things was, and why I still get what I still get a kick out of today is just showing how easy certain things are. Because I know for me personally, if I look at something like character rigging, and I'm like, it's a lot of technical stuff and some creative, like you can build your character, but then good luck rigging it and going through all that complexity. So I just stay away from it.
Right.
I look at something like Houdini and I'm like, yeah, come back to me when it works a little bit easier, like Cinema 4D or something.
Right.
Cause like, I don't want to be trying to find a script or code or whatever. Cause then my eyes glaze over. I'm just like,
riggers are some of the most technical people right. in the visual effects world.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Right.
And that just totally turns me off. I'm like, I want to make things and not code things.
Right.
But little did I know they were recording our presentations at this meetup.
Okay.
And I found this out later and I was just like, oh man. And a couple weeks later,
they should tell you that you have to sign document about that.
I had no idea we were being, which is good because I was nervous enough that as it is.
Okay.
If they're like, hey,
right.
Maxon, we're recording this from Maxon and they want to see this stuff. I'm like, right. Oh, I would have been worse, which is, you know, the bar was very low as it was. So I don't even want to know how much lower I could have went.
Okay.
But I got this call from a really good friend of mine to this. I'm actually going to meet him after this.
Nice.
Matthias Omotola. He was the community outreach manager at Maxon, still is to this day. And this was like 2011, I think it was.
Okay.
He and the team over at Maxon is like the big reason why there's such an awesome community around Cinema 4D.
Right.
I think that just that really inspires people to get out and teach and spread their knowledge and stuff like that. But Thais calls me up. He's like, hey, we saw your presentation, thought you did really good. Would you want to present at NAB for us in Vegas? And I was
bigger
like,
audience.
What? Yeah. It's like, yeah, you get like 2,000 people online at any given time and, you know, 50 to 100 people in person. And I'm just like, oh my God. And so it was one of these things where you hark back to like, I didn't know 3D at all, and I had to do a logo by the end of the week. I was like, right. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'll say yes.
Okay.
And we'll see where this goes, because this is a big stage, and, you know, maybe I want to go freelance. Like, this is a good pivot point. So decided, I'm like, you know, I'm going to work on my public speaking skills and started just for practice recording tutorials. And there's this really good book by Austin Kleon. It's called Show Your Work. And just the mere thing of making something and knowing that you're going to put it online for everyone to see and pick apart, that really lets you add in the extra quality and really make sure that you're trying hard and making sure that it looks great, it sounds great, that you let that thing out and wait for it to be just totally destroyed by the internet. So that kind of inspired me to be like, okay, I'm going to do these tutorials. And when I get to a point where I think I'm doing okay, I'm going to post these, because that's really going to put me in a different mindset, where the right mindset I need to be in when I actually am ready to go in front of people live and do a presentation. And so I started posting a few and, you know, slowly got some traffic. And, you know, people would reach out and like, oh, that was a really cool technique. I didn't know about that. Like, you broke it down in a way that, you know, it really spoke to me. I was like, okay, cool. Well, that's awesome. Like, I'm just sitting here talking. I have no rhyme and reason to what I'm doing. It's just like, I know I'm self-taught and I know how my brain works.
Right.
And I know that if I break things down to the most basic terms and I don't try to show off by being super technical or trying to, you know, here's this piece of code that does this thing. And like, you know, like, that's just not me.
That's not you. Okay.
That's not me. And again, like, when that stuff happens, that just like kind of turns me off. So if there's any complicated stuff whatsoever, probably not teaching it, unless it seems complicated, but it's really not, you know. That's what I like to shine lights on, is like, yeah, this looks really amazing, it looks complex, but like, check this out, like, it's really not that hard at all.
That's great.
So yeah, that was kind of like how I got into teaching. And, you know, I went to,
but don't you think that a lot of people like to make things more complicated than they need to be, because they're trying to show off
exactly
like some of the knowledge they know, and therefore they're just teaching bad habits to people,
which I fell in the habit of as well.
Yeah.
You know, at a certain point I was like, oh, I see what other people are doing now. And I was like, okay, well, especially for presenting in front of a big audience, like my first NAB presentations, like, I feel like everyone was trying to one up each other with like the complexity of their setups.
Right.
And now I think it's completely different, because it's like, like Maxon's the, like when you're presenting for Maxon, you don't want to be like, yeah, let's show how technical and complex this could be and totally lose people. It's like, no. You want to speak to the
everyman. By the way, look how amazing it looks and look how simple the journey was to get there.
Precisely. Right? Yeah. Right. So I think if you go back 10 years, the presentations that were happening then to now is completely different.
Right.
Like they're speaking to a different audience. You know, I feel like back then they were kind of preaching to the choir. Like,
right.
You already know Cinema 4D. Let's do this really cool technical stuff. And now it's like, no, that's not marketing. Like, yeah. You want to get new users in. So you want to show how easy this is. Right. So yeah, that's, that kind of took off and I started doing stuff for, lynda.com, which is LinkedIn Learning now. And
yeah. Oh, that's right.
So and that was like the first paid training gig that I ever did.
Okay.
And like it just got momentum and I just saw that as a good marketing thing. Like just like you're doing podcasts now. Yeah, like yeah. That was for me that I got a lot of leads and clients reaching out to me
through that platform,
through tutorials on right. Vimeo back then.
Right.
And so, you know, I was still working at ABC and recording tutorials and, you know, doing some like moonlighting as a freelancer and just went and eventually, you know, 6 years after working at ABC, I went full-time freelance. And, you know, every year since 2011, 2012, I've spoken for Maxon at NEB.
Oh, nice.
To this day, like I'm going again in April, which okay. is great. So it's just like, you know, it's funny because, you know, that call from Matthias, I always tell him like, dude, you changed the trajectory of my career. Like,
right.
If I would have done that presentation and then just, you know, called it a day, like who knows what I'd be doing? Like, I might be still working at ABC. Who knows?
Right.
But just that challenge put in front of me where it's like, we're going to invite you to Vegas. Mm-hmm. You're going to teach this stuff in front of people. Mm-hmm. And that just totally opened the door to doing tutorials and teaching online. And I just discovered that, you know, I really loved teaching people and showing people how easy things were because what I was speaking to was me, you know, 10 years ago where they're completely self-taught. They didn't go to SCAD or Ringling or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And like that really was fulfilling for me because I know I wouldn't have gotten to where I was at that point without Andrew Kramer, Nick Campbell, Grace yep. Gilgorilla, because they're giving out really great free knowledge. And, you know, when when I started doing tutorials, that was back in maybe 2013. And yeah. There wasn't a lot of people doing them back then either. Yep. But now it's like there's incredible tutorial artists all over the place teaching everything. And the production value now is crazy. Like you go look back at like 2013, it's like some crappy webcam video. Yep. And, you know, people are like, you're not even shaved yet. Yeah. You just look like garbage.
But now they're making them like full on. Like,
and now it's like, you know, they got really good cameras, really good mics.
Right.
And, yeah. So the production value has definitely gone up. But yeah, and then, you know, I rode the freelance ride for quite a bit and started doing more training for Maxon and their training website called Cineversity. And stuff for LinkedIn. And I got approached by Joey Korenman, who's the CEO of School of Motion. He said, hey, your Cinema 4D stuff is great. We're looking to, you know, make some courses on the 3D side. And we'd love to have you do like an intro to Cinema 4D.
Okay.
Course. And I was like, heck yeah. So did that. And that was like 6 months of recording stuff and writing outlines and like the care and effort and that goes into a single course, like from the idea to conception to completion, it's like a year. And that's just because
yes.
the quality level has to be there.
Yes.
You
yes,
know,
yes,
like
yes.
we want to set ourselves above the rest. Like we want to be one of the best places for people to go to learn something. Yep. So it's very rigorous. And
I know the struggle because I did one for Noman a long time ago, like so 2005. Right. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, yeah, I know all this information. I'm just going to say it out loud in front of a microphone and show people what to do. And it turns out that's not that simple.
No.
You have to create the content. You have to really master the material. You have to do it over and over again. It's a lot of it. And it can take a year sometimes just to make a good curriculum in a course, right?
Yeah. And I mean, talking to people that, because I think at NAB, I spoke in terms of like, you already know this software.
Sure.
So like, that's the baseline that I can kind of speak from. Meanwhile, like when I started doing the Cinema 4D course, it was aimed at people who've never touched 3D before.
Right.
So like Fresnel, like all the terms in your jingle.
Yeah.
no one knew, like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Like, what is reflective? What is ambient occlusion? What the hell is all this stuff?
Right.
And that was definitely a struggle. And I think going through that again, like I've never done a massive, it's like 10 weeks
yep.
of course material. It was over 35 hours of videos.
Wow.
And I'm talking the entire time and I was on camera. So you couldn't just like, you could edit this podcast if I, you know, drop an F-bomb or something. Right. Like you could just, I'm going to edit that out. But when you're on camera, like if you do a lot of edits, you're just like in the lower left corner and you're like just Max Headroom where your head's just bopping on all Max Headroom. That's another, you know, call back to showing my age here.
Yeah. Yep.
But, it definitely made me a better teacher.
Sure.
And to speak at a level in terms that like someone who's never used 3D could understand. And like, I felt like I grew as just an educator, even a speaker. Like I was much more thoughtful about what I was going to say, because again, like I'm on camera the entire time. So if I have to edit something, like I probably have to re-record like a half hour of stuff if I screwed something up. So I'd have to pause, be very thoughtful about what I'm talking about, have all my notes laid out.
Think about where you can go back to what edit, what part of your outline
exactly.
and start recording from there.
Yeah. So you just like I'm just going to pause here. And if I screw up, at least I can always come back to this point.
Right.
Kind of deal. But what I found through that was, you know, just seeing people make the jump from zero 3D to going through the same journey that I went through where you're afraid of 3D, you're afraid of this new thing.
Sure.
You get your feet wet in it. You start having fun. You're like, this isn't that hard. And then it clicks.
Yeah.
And then you just see what the students do and they just take off and that you just see the enthusiasm and like, man, I've never had that kind of like making that course to this day is one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my career.
Nice.
Was just seeing, you know, the impacts on these students. They'd come to me and say like, you got me hired at this studio and it's my dream job. And thank you so much. I wouldn't be able to do it without you. And it's like, no, you did it. Like I just laid out stuff in front of you. You did all the work. Like,
right.
But just to see like you're helping people on their journey to, you know, they're self-taught and they do it and they get through it and they land whatever job they want. Like that was way cooler than like any client project I ever did and getting whatever kind of feedback and,
sure.
you know, so, you know, I've discovered I really like that and wanted to try to change my career and pivot to a point where, you know, there was probably like, you know, 5 years ago, I was maybe doing 20% of my income off training and 80% client. And then it got to about 50-50 a few years ago. And then the School of Motion course just really kind of tipped the scales for me. And I just approached Joey. I was like, hey, like I had a lot of fun doing that. And I told him, I was like I said, it's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And I was like, mm-hmm. you have a lot of After Effects and 2D content, but like, I think timing's right to start building out the 3D thing. And
sure.
like, you know, I don't want to just do this one course and be done. Like I want to continue teaching and continue interacting with the community in that capacity is like, let me pitch this idea to it. Like, what if I was your 3D creative director and help build up the 3D side of things? Cause at the time he was just 2D and he's like, all right.
Okay.
So over the,
actually that's a good point. Let's go back to that. Let's tell us a little bit about School of Motion. Obviously you're still there now, right? Obviously.
Oh yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that school. Where did that start? Tell every, you know, what that's about.
So School of Motion was created by, Joey Quarryman, I think in like 2013. And it was just like an After Effects tutorial site.
Okay.
And so he was working at a studio. He built a studio called Toil in Boston.
Yep.
And he worked there for a few years and he was just like, you know what? This is a lot more work. This is kind of getting me away from the stuff that I wanted to do. And I think he just kind of like got burnt out from the studio game,
mm-hmm.
Which I think you're seeing a lot these days, which that's a whole nother subject.
Right.
So he decided that he wanted to start teaching and he, you know, went down to Florida and started teaching at Ringling and he actually taught Cinema 4D there.
Oh, right.
So, and just being in that system there,
mm-hmm.
and just seeing all the bureaucracy and just how much students were paying to go there,
uh-huh.
and just getting out of school, having all that debt saddled on your back.
Yep.
It's like, okay, good luck in your career. You're 200K in debt. Good luck. Have fun with that.
Okay.
And like, I can just, I can't even imagine. Like if that was me when I got out of college,
right?
Like I couldn't, like I would not be, like I'd be working at a watch. Like I'd be working at Fossil. I'd be right. working at, you know, an Uber driver, which right. didn't even exist back then.
Right.
But like, I would be trying to like really
anything
be
to supplement
out.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like at that point, are my skills, like I can't keep building my skills because right. unless I have a job that's with that, like yeah. I'm just wasting time. So I can only imagine what some students are dealing with where if they don't have a job immediately out of school, like what are they doing? And are they, whatever they're doing, is that taking away from them continuing to build and refine their skills? And, you know, do they
I think
atrophy?
It's a very dangerous slope. I mean, there are some very good schools that are for profit. Mm-hmm. But you got to be very careful and really think about it, right?
Right.
And when someone claims that they have it, well, let's just put it this way. If their financial aid department is larger than their faculty department,
yeah,
there are certain schools that way.
Yep.
Just ask how many people work in their financial aid department and how many people work in their faculty department, and you will know the ratio of the debt that these students are acquiring. So
exactly.
just something to be aware of. Anyway, go back. It's yeah. fascinating.
Yeah.
So he did. So he decided he was going to do something different, right?
Yeah, he's like, with clear conscience, he couldn't continue like doing what he was doing. So he had this idea for, you know what? Like, I see what's wrong in the brick and mortar system.
Yep.
And I see how expensive it is. And, you know, some students, they get out and they do great. But even if you do great, how long is it taking for that really super talented person to pay off their student loan?
Right.
Like 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
Even more? You yeah. know,
and they and may not even they may not even like what they're doing after they figured out and they went through school and now they're all in this debt and they have
yeah
no, yeah.
So I mean, I listened to a podcast, Dave Ramsey podcast, which is all about you know, financial stuff.
Yes.
You just see how mentally and psychologically it just having debt affects you and affects your decision making. Like, and I see it every day where, you know, one of the problems with our industry is, you know, people just not having confidence in talking with clients when you're a freelancer to just mm-hmm. like get paid your rate or know your worth. And man, when it's hard to have that confidence when, you know, I just got to pay my bills. Like, I'll take anything.
Right.
You know, it's this scarcity mindset that just right. creeps in. And it's just crazy how much just the simple thing of having debt can just totally destroy your confidence and like totally change the arc of your career because you're always worried about that.
Yeah.
Joey ended up building his own website, School Motion. It started as like a tutorial website. He did 30 days of After Effects. So every single day for a month, he like built up his newsletter subscriber list. And he started working on a single course. It was just animation and After Effects.
Mm-hmm.
And he reached out to me. Like, I knew of his website. I knew he did tutorials. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, wanted to get, you know, some tutorial people, like, check out my new course for free. And
yeah,
there you
yeah.
go. And I went through it. And, again, being self-taught, like, I did not take an animation class. So I didn't know animation fundamentals.
Yeah.
I did not know of the term. Other than ease in, ease out, I didn't know anticipation. I didn't know all right. these other squash and shit. And so I took his course and I was like, wow, like this totally filled in all these gaps in my foundation. And man, did like my work just totally change where like I started having fun animating because I knew how to, like, I would look at an animation and be like, I know why that looks good now.
As opposed to just knowing it's good and you don't know why.
Right, right? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like there's something about this animation. Like it looks great, but I don't know what it is. Like, right. I guess there's ease in, ease out. Like a lot of ease in, ease out, because that's the thing, right? You just do that, right?
Right.
Some
people don't even do that, though.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean that was me.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of one of the downsides of being self-taught is, especially now, there's so much noise
yeah.
as far as tutorials go that like it can be completely overwhelming. And of course, if you go to a school, there's a set curriculum, and you go through this path. And you know exactly what to learn. So Joey did this animation boot camp class and it did really well. And then he did a design boot camp class
yep.
With one of his old buddies that works at a studio in Boston as well. And it just slowly started taking off.
Nice.
And
this is about 2013 he started, you said?
Yeah, I think 2015 is where he really started to build it out and like added a second course. And then he did like a character animation boot camp with one of his colleagues that still works at Ringling. And, you know, I think he just started, you know, he saw the bureaucracy in the system and he just really wanted to disrupt that. And he saw that success and the word of mouth spread like wildfire. Like, it was insane how big and fast it grew. And to this day, like, that's how we get students in, is because the quality, the content there is so good. The instructors are so good.
Right.
We have like some of the best well-known instructors around. Like,
yeah. But how does it work? So if you, let's say, okay, I want to learn motion graphics through School of Motion. Mm-hmm. It's you just buy a bunch of tutorials, there's packages. How does it work?
So that's what makes School of Motion unlike anything else that's out there. So it's not passive. So it's not like you sign up, you purchase a course and you download and you watch it at your own leisure. And
right. Cause there's plenty of that on YouTube, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, yeah. Basically that's like a curated YouTube playlist where it's like, here's your path.
Sure.
Just watch it at your own leisure.
Right.
And I think when it's kind of like just being in college in general, where it's all about, it's not about the school. It's what you do with that knowledge. Are you actually digesting? Are you doing the work?
Okay.
Because you could spend $250,000 at a school and get absolutely nothing from it.
Sure.
Because you just sit there and not, and just, you know,
right,
jerk around or whatever. But how the School of Motion system works is you sign up for a course. You basically, most of our courses are priced around $800,000, $900,000 or whatever, something like that. So either $800 to $1,000.
Okay.
And they're 8 to 12 week courses.
Okay.
And when you sign up, it's like it's fed to you over time. So week one, every single day, there's a new piece of content out every single day for, what is that, 2.5 months or something like that?
Okay.
Depending on the length of the course. And you also have this amazing support staff of teaching assistants. So you're doing homework and you're also getting critiqued on it. And I think that's one of the things where that's where the real growth comes. Is when you're just, because I mean, when I was doing tutorials, I'd follow it and I'd make something. And again, going back to that show your workbook, like the reason why you want to show stuff is because you want to get that feedback. And hopefully it's constructive and people aren't just crapping all over it.
Sure.
But once you put that out in the world, people see like, this is great, but you could, you know, check this out and maybe tighten this up over here, or the animation or whatever. And you don't get that feedback when you're looking at something for a very long time.
Right.
Because you just get used to it. I think the teaching assistant aspect of School of Motion and just the, we have Facebook groups for every single course.
Oh, wow.
So you're in like, that's like your virtual classroom. So you that's see.
The interesting that Facebook has now become the forum, right?
Yeah. Which another subject is a lot of people are like wanting us to get off of it just because of all the stuff going on with Facebook, which.
That's interesting too, but we can get in. That's a long conversation. But okay. But either way, you basically have a community of some kind. You have a direct link to your teaching assistants, right?
Right.
And you pay for a series of classes and you come away with knowledge, right?
Yeah. So
you're not offering a degree.
No one really needs
a bachelor's of After Effects, right?
No. But, yeah, right.
So, but you do need knowledge in After Effects, and this is a great resource for you to get it. It sounds like it's an expensive course, but it's really not if you think about it compared to college, right?
Right, exactly. And I mean, it's one of those things where you're investing in yourself,
right?
And like, okay, you spend $1,000.
Or you want to supplement your knowledge.
Want to supplement your knowledge. So that when you add that skill to your skill set and you can market that, you're talking $1,000. Billable hours wise, like how you probably pay that off in 2 months.
Yeah.
And that's a skill that you always have for the rest of your career. So you're always getting the gains from that short little $1,000. Yes. So that's like, if we're talking, you know, 80% returns. That's way better than the stock market.
Yeah.
So you should just always invest in yourself.
Yeah. Always.
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 But again, it goes back to like, you have to go into that course.
Yep.
You have to keep up. You have to, you know, turn in your homework because you want to take advantage of the teaching assistant's feedback.
Yep.
So it's just like a normal college where you get what you put in.
Right.
You
know? But yeah, and if you put in $1,000 and you don't do anything with it, then you wasted $1,000.
Yeah, you have $1,000 and you can pay that off really quickly. You know? Yeah. Meanwhile, if you went through two years of regular college, right, and now you got $200,000 or whatever.
Now it's a little bit more stressful.
Yeah, now it's a little bit.
And if you didn't take advantage of it because you were drinking the whole time.
Exactly. Just partying. And it's funny because you see all kinds of, again, it's not, the education is just there.
Right.
But it's what you bring to it, that absolutely, what you do with that knowledge, that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Because you can be completely self-taught and be well ahead of someone that went to one of the best schools in the world.
But I think it's really cool because, okay, so there's several things, right? So your school, I've had a thing about, like, you know, there, you got to learn certain skills that are universal and you got to learn certain skills that are like of the moment and technical, right?
Sure.
So what's interesting is that you are basically offering a course there, like, okay, here's a small digestible piece of information that you need. I'm say quote unquote small compared to doing, you know, 4 years in college, right?
Sure.
It's like, I need to know this skill set because it's something I'm interested in, or I need to know for my job, for my next job, or whatever it is. You spend your $1,000, or maybe even your employee can pay you $1,000. You know, that I'm sure that happens a lot. It's like, I want to, you know, because a lot of jobs offer continuing education, right? So you spend that money and you're like, great. And then you learn it, and then somehow, you know, after a while, you get, you know, return on that investment really quickly, as you described. But after a while, maybe a new skill set shows up, or the ones that you learn you don't need them as much anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, then you can just spend another $1,000 and get to the next level, right?
Right.
It's not like if I go to school, right? If I went to school and I got a master's in learning Alias and Wavefront packages that are long dead.
Right. Yes.
What use is that? You know what I mean?
That's a problem too. Like I go to a lot of these trade shows with Maxon, and a lot of people have heard of Cinema 4D, and they are in college. They're college students, and they've been using Maya or 3D Studio Max.
Right.
And you know that, like, if you want to go into VFX in Hollywood, like, you have to learn those softwares, because sure, Cinema 4D really doesn't have those tools to do that kind of work.
Right? Sure.
But
if you want to go into motion graphics,
like, you're kind of, you know, putting out a small fire with, you know, a giant fire hose, when you're just overkill it. You're just, you know, you're,
and it's going to take you too long to get there too.
Right. And you're spending too much time learning the technical stuff.
Yep.
When you could be learning the fundamentals of lighting or something right. And I think that's a lot of the problem too, is where, you know, some of these schools, they're just teaching 3D Studio Max because some instructor or some professor got a sweet deal with it and they just stuck with it.
Yeah.
Even though, like, for motion graphics, like, it's mostly Cinema 4D.
Yeah.
You know, for, if you're doing flying logos and stuff, like, you don't need to use Maya for that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Absolutely. So a lot of that is just giving the wrong tools to the students that want to do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, in any job, there's people that do their job very well.
Yeah.
And some people who are awful. My mom's a doctor.
Yeah.
There's horror stories where you think, like, your doctor's doing the best thing for you. No, there's some doctors that suck, just like, you know, you go to McDonald's and some people are nice, some people suck.
Right.
You know? And that's the same thing with instructors too. There's some people that teach and they're just checked out. Like, I used to work with some folks at ABC and just places throughout my career where, you know, you had, like, the very eager people who loved their jobs and wanted to keep learning. And then there's others that are just like, I'm checked out. I'm just showing up.
I'm just showing up and getting a paycheck.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if you have one of those instructors, like, you just got the bad roll of the dice.
Right.
And I think there's too much of that. To, like, if you're spending $150,000 and you get the bad roll of the dice, like, you just got screwed, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hear stories on both ends where, like, you know, there's very successful people that went to traditional schools, but, I mean, again, debt. And then there's people that just, you know, they got out and they got nothing from it. I mean,
sure,
the amount of time, it's so heartbreaking, because every now and then I'll get an email from, or like an Instagram message or something saying, like, you know, thank you for all the training you have for free. Like, you're teaching me more than my instructor, and I'm paying how much money for art school? And I'm like, that is awful.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a couple things I want to interject here because I think it's important. One, first of all, I do not want to discourage people from getting an education.
Oh,
right?
Of course.
Right. So getting an education and degree is important, but you should be very scrupulous about what you're doing and make sure you get the value. Right. It costs a lot of money, and like you said, take advantage of that situation. Look at the school you're going to. Make sure you have what you need to get there. That does not mean that there is not specific skill sets that you can learn in a really cool and specific way in the way that you guys are doing it at School of Motion, because I've seen that as well, right? People wanted to learn V-Ray lighting, back in 2005. You know, I did an exterior lighting and interior lighting course. At the moment, it was the only resource they had was those tutorials, right?
So,
and no, you don't need to go to college to learn that. But if you need to learn how to light in V-Ray, that was basically your best resource, right?
Right.
So that's a good thing. And so it cost you $85 for a DVD or whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
And that was great. So that was a resource people have. And I think that's really good that those resources exist. I think what you guys are doing is pretty cool because it's also active learning, because you are basically like, oh, okay, I'm doing it, 8 weeks. And if I don't sit there and do the homework, then I'm not taking advantage of that money I spent. Mm-hmm. And it's fairly affordable if you think about it, considering that. So,
and I think it's enough money where you put your money where your mouth is.
Sure.
You put a better money. Because if you don't follow through with that, like, you just lost all that money. I mean, it's the same thing with over the long span of 4 years where you're putting a bet on yourself.
Right.
And some people just go to art school because they're like, yeah, I just want to fart around and make 3D stuff. And
I don't know what I'm going to do in my life.
They don't know what they want to do. Yeah. And if you don't really know what you want to do, should you really be putting down as much money to get a law degree? probably not.
Right.
I mean, you could probably get what I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, I went to a cheap university. I mean, people are going to community colleges that have awesome programs too.
Sure.
If you want to go in and I was definitely one of these people that I needed to be around other people to push me, because I was kind of a slacker back then. Okay. And again, you don't know what you want. Like, if I would have went to one of these Ringling or something like that, I might have been one of those students that didn't get a lot out of it because I just didn't know what I wanted and I had no direction. So I think some people need to go through some strict, have an instructor get on their butt, telling them, you need to get your shit together, or you're never going to make it in this industry, and you're not going to get your money's worth of what you're paying here.
Yep.
So some people need that. But there's some other people that are self-driven and motivated. Like, that's how I turned out to be, because out of necessity is I want to be in this field. I screwed up when I was in college. I didn't pay attention to the design fundamentals. I didn't get Picasso in art history class. I thought all that stuff was stupid.
Right.
And now that I'm out, I'm just what an idiot I was. I was so walled off from these experiences that I could have had because I was just a stupid college student. And if your mind isn't right at the time, good thing I only, was $30,000-$40,000 and I didn't have any debt, because then I could make up for the fact that I screwed up and take a School of Motion class or watch some tutorials to fill in all those gaps in my foundation.
Right.
And, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I go to Ringling and I see some of the students at all these other.
Yep. It's okay.
Whoop.
Don't worry. It didn't record.
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
You see the students at some of these schools, and some of them you definitely know, they have a talent, and man, they're totally taking advantage of everything that's available to them here.
Right.
And then there's some others, they're just man, I hope you do well in this industry, because I think you're going to get out in the world and it's going to be hard for you to get a job, and you're going to be having to play a lot of catch up like I had to, but you're going to be saddled with all that debt. And again, the psychological effect that takes on you throughout your career, you could have done that same thing with no debt and be in a way better, or the same situation or a better situation than that you are now.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. It's interesting. So listen, I could go on for a while about this conversation because education is so important in terms of how people are learning these skills and using them. And, you know, and specifically in terms of art, you know, a lot of people think of art school or art whatever. It's like, oh, you're going to be the starving artist, right? You're going to be the person that wants to paint and can't sell his painting to an art gallery. That's not what art is. Mm-hmm. Everything you touch, everything you see, everything you do has been touched by an artist, has been designed. This glass, this cable, someone went into CAD and designed how this cable connector works to this microphone, right? So everything has been designed by an artist in some way, shape, or form. So there's lots of room and lots of places for art or creativity to take place. And I think it's really important to learn that, and, you know, and everyone watches TV, right? Everyone watches a bunch of stuff and all of it requires motion graphics of some kind. So I think it's a great skill set that you guys are doing out there. And it's really cool that you sort of focused or, you know, taken your 3D stuff and brought that into the area. Can you tell people, let's make sure that people know a little bit about your courses and where they can find out about it on School of Motion.
Yeah, so it's schoolofmotion.com. We have a lot of courses up there. We go in semesters, so much like a traditional school. And again, so you're with
a group. Have to sign up for that because you're going with a group and it's going through a curriculum, you have you can't just start at any point.
Right, exactly. Right. So everything is in for people that are like, well, I'm in Asia or I'm in Europe and we're based in North America. Right. Like, you know, what are the time zone differences? Is this live? They're all pre-recorded courses or pre-recorded videos.
Sure.
So the instruction element's there. But again, you have the TA, you have a teaching assistant assigned just to you.
Okay.
So you can always ping them and ask them questions if you have any technical difficulties or you just want feedback. That's a great thing. And I think that's what we're trying to recreate from the benefits of actually being in a physical classroom. Again, we talk about how I connect now via social media and how that wasn't a thing because Facebook didn't exist back when I started. You know, that people are working remotely all the time. The whole team at School of Motion's all remote. And I think you're seeing a lot of freelancers doing the same thing. They're all working remotely. They're not working in studio. So it's not a weird thing. So that support group is in that Facebook group. And the camaraderie that you get in there is amazing. Like you get friends. We even have a student outreach person that works for us full time that they will help place you at certain studios and make you aware of job openings and places like that. So very much like a traditional college where, you know, when you go through one of our courses and you do a good job and you're making great work, like we're going to help promote that and get you placed at places like Frame.io or Blizzard. We have alumni that works at Blizzard now. So, and you know, starting their own studios and stuff like that. So, that element is definitely there. And I think that's what sets us above all the passive learning outlets out there. And that's why we want to go after the brick and mortar is because we want to recreate that environment. Cause like you need that encouragement, you need that feedback. Cause that's where that real growth happens. So, like I said, most of our courses are, you know, they can be like some of our smaller courses. We have like a design kickstart, which is like, you have no experience with design whatsoever. We also have, you know, intro to After Effects. You don't know, you've never opened up After Effects before. You've never laid a keyframe. Like we got that.
Okay.
We have, you know, just general fundamentals classes like design boot camp, animation boot camp. We just launched a VFX course.
Okay.
And an expressions for After Effects course.
Nice.
There's an illustration for motion class as well, which is highly popular. And then there's that, there's an advanced motion methods taught by Sonder, who is one of the top animators in the field.
Oh, nice.
And that's like, if you're a good animator, but man, you want to take this to the next level.
Okay.
Like that's the class you take.
Nice. Okay. There you go.
So we have all different kinds of courses. We're starting to build out like a student roadmap.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like start here and then start building up this stuff. So like a class like mine, which is called Cinema 4D Basecamp, we just get you into Cinema 4D, how 3D works, all the lighting fundamentals, all the 3D fundamentals. So it's in a software, but it's not like technical, you know, because anything you learn in our 3D class, you can go to Maya and get that translated. Like, you're learning about ambient occlusion. You'll learn all the jingle phrases, you know? So that's definitely something that we always try to, you know, we're not just a tutorial.
Right.
That you take one little nugget of information and you leave.
Right.
Like, you're getting these foundational pieces of knowledge that will take you on to that next step in your career. We have, how many classes do we have? We try to release at least 3 courses a year. And again, we go through painstaking lengths to make them like the best quality. So they take like a year to develop. So it's pretty exciting. So I'm currently working on the second Cinema 4D class.
Okay.
Which should hopefully be coming out in the summer. And that's going to, again, like, you know, Cinema 4D, but how do you take this to the next level to make you even more
marketable? I think it's amazing that it takes you guys a year to that. That just shows the amount of production value you guys are putting into this stuff.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And I mean, from the first courses we did, like, I recorded Cinema 4D Basecamp 2 years ago.
Right.
And the quality level from just 2 years ago to now is insane.
Nice.
Like, nice mics and nice cameras. And yeah, the production is definitely there. And just, you know, when you go through that long, you really have to hone in on like our outlining process of just like, what's the content we're talking about.
Yep.
That's a few month process right there.
Nice.
So you really like, once you get everything out, you're like, okay, actually, let's go back there. Actually, I thought of a better way to do this. So really, we're not just throwing this stuff on the wall and seeing what sticks.
Well, it's funny you say that because I know a lot of people's like, I learned how to do V-Ray from your tutorial back in 2005. It's like, oh my gosh, V-Ray has changed a lot since 2005. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So you want to make sure it's right. You know?
And that's the thing too, where, you know, we can always be up on the latest and greatest where, you know, maybe in a school curriculum, maybe they just they don't have the budget to upgrade to the right software or something like that. It's an exciting time, and I got signed on as the 3D creative director there. So we're really hard at work, really amping up the 3D content. And we also release free tutorials and stuff like that as well.
Okay.
So if you do go to schoolofmotion.com, there's a lot of free content and free tutorials. We do
just, people get a flavor of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You get introduced to some of our instructors. You get a little taste of like my teaching style.
Nice. All right.
And my horrible jokes.
Okay.
And so we do like daily, we do quick tips and like shortcut key videos and like all kinds of stuff. So
that's cool.
Keep updating the blog. And we also have a weekly podcast as well that Joey hosts. And we get all types of people from the motion graphics community. So if you're into motion graphics or want to be into motion graphics, like, we get all the biggest and best and brightest in the industry that come on.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, listen, EJ, thank you so much for being here and being able to spend your time here and tell us all about this great stuff, about your back history and about School of Motion and, like, you know, figuring out about education. And I think it's a great resource you guys are doing. So thanks so much for doing it.
Thank you so much for having me.